We were talking about some internal factors that promote difficult behavior. We had talked about psychosocial immaturity, spiritual immaturity. We talked about psychological dysfunction, more severe mental disorders. And now let's look at the possibility there might be some substance abuse going on here with our difficult person. Substance abuse in the church, you say? Certainly. We can just not rule out the possibility of a chemical addiction. Of course, alcoholism doesn't first come to our mind, does it, when we think about problems in the church? But it is there, and it is something to be considered. What may be even more common in the church than alcohol abuse would be what is being called now the hidden epidemic of prescription drug abuse. Regardless, about 22% of the population is battling some form of substance abuse at any given time in the United States, and some of that percentage is in the church. Also, what we might not often think about is the fact that an astounding 30% of the population in the United States is diagnosed as suffering from depression or an anxiety disorder. And this comes from the National Comorbidity Survey. So the vast number of that 30% would be on some kind of medication, because that is the treatment of choice for most psychiatrists and psychologists, even though they do also have counseling as part of that. Well, everybody has heard of the word Prozac. Drugs like Prozac are so commonly prescribed now that it's pretty much a household word. And likely drugs such as Paxil and some of the new medication, the new SSRIs, will also become household words. What is not always known, however, is that many of these drugs have side effects. One of them, for example, a common one actually, is sexual dysfunction. And that, of course, is a stressor right there. And it's not just a matter that the physician decides that you need this drug and he writes out a prescription for it and you're on your way. No, often you don't get the exact most effective drug for you right the first time. There's some experimentation that goes on to get what is exactly right for you. Then too often the dosage needs to be adjusted. Sometimes, for example, with mood elevating drugs, too much of the drug will cause the patient to be overstimulated and in a sense be revving too high. And this then causes them to be overexcitable, agitated, and so on. Well, all these things are hidden, aren't they, as we greet our parishioners as they come through the door on Sunday morning. But they can create difficulties and put strain on relationships that we might not even have considered. These sort of problems don't generally become known at all, do they? Certainly those who suffer from these conditions don't readily talk about it, especially in the church. Well, I've been talking about all these factors, internal or external, to help us consider what's going on behind the difficult behavior of your difficult person. Depending on what your role is with this person, knowing these things, you can better suggest solutions, intervene appropriately, and most of all, have grace for them. For certainly, our difficult person is not the enemy. Satan, that liar and thief of all that's good and harmonious in relationships, is. I'm now going to talk about three final factors in evaluating a difficult person. The first is your relationship to the difficult person. Secondly, the extent of the difficult person's influence. And thirdly, the duration of the problem. So first of all, what is your relationship to the difficult person? Are you a friend, a coworker, an employee, a boss, pastor? Is your difficult person your husband and he is the pastor? Where do you go for help? Are you a peer in this relationship, or are you in a position of authority? As pastor, You need to be concerned with not just those who personally offend you, but those who are causing turmoil in the body as a whole. Much will depend on your organization's structure, procedures, and how much actual authority you do have as you deal with this difficult person. And do you have overlapping roles with this person? One of the problems in the church is the complexity of roles we have with each other. Relationships can become difficult because they're so potentially loaded. And let me give you an example of that. Let's say you're the pastor, and as such, you work closely with your assistant pastor. But who is this man? He's your employee, right? But he's also your golf buddy on Monday. He receives you as his spiritual oversight on Sunday. But he is also your brother in Christ who comes over to pray when your kid is sick. He's an uncle figure who's taking your kids and his to the ball game. And by the way, he's also working closely with your wife in the music ministry. On top of that, his younger brother, who also belongs to your church, is engaged to marry your oldest daughter. When people become difficult with that many interfaces, so much more is at stake. This, however, is so typical of the church. Okay, point number two in other factors in evaluating a difficult person. What is the extent of the difficult person's influence? Does it extend just to you? Or does it extend not only to you, but others around you? Is there a general consensus that this person is difficult? That they have a chronic, habitual way of reacting, which causes stress, turmoil, not only for you, but for everyone around them? Are there repercussions in an even wider arena? Does the difficult person hinder the entire organization, not just you or some others around you? Maybe they have a leadership position in the church. They're disrupting committees or small groups and so on. Are they hurtful to the body as a whole? Are they a catalyst for those widespread D words, you know, disunity, division, discontent, dissatisfaction, discord? Perhaps mediation or even church discipline may be appropriate in cases such as this. And we will be specifically discussing that later in the course. And thirdly and finally, what is the duration of the problem? How long has this problem with the difficult person been going on? If it's just a short time, that's one thing. But if this has been going on over weeks, months, or perhaps years, that's another. And there may need to be a different remedy for that than if it was just something short term. All right, that concludes our discussion of factors that promote difficult behavior. I hope the various areas that I've raised, the questions that I've asked, will help you to consider what the factors are in dealing with the difficult person that you're involved with. Well, now I'm going to move on to another section. And here we're no longer talking about behaviors that make for difficult behavior in general. We are looking at those behaviors that you personally, specifically find difficult. In other words, this is different than saying, why are people difficult? But instead saying, why is this person difficult for me? Even though they might not be difficult for many other folks at all. In other words, with apologies to, I think it's Dean Martin, this section could be entitled, Everybody Bugs Somebody Sometime. Or as Mark Twain would say, nothing so needs reforming as other people's habits. Or as Thornton Wilder would say, 99% of the people in the world are fools, and the rest of us are in great danger of contagion. Well, everybody does bug somebody sometime. So how about the person who just rubs you the wrong way? you know, your difficult person may have no character flaws, no major difficult behaviors, really. It's just that they rub us the wrong way. There are personal grace builders, nothing specific. I just find them hard to get along with, period. You know, you think to yourself, I don't know how she puts up with him. He drives me crazy. But his wife quite likes him. Why can't I? Well, maybe the person has a different personality type than you do. Personality typing has become popular among thousands of churches in a wide variety of denominations, and I guess it really started with Tim LaHaye's study of the old Greek temperaments. You know, that's the sanguines, the melancholics, the cholerics, and the phlegmatics. However, the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, which is shortened to MBTI, is a more detailed study of the temperaments. In fact, it isolates 16 temperaments and gives a fuller insight into your personality makeup. It is one of the most researched tests of the 20th century. Millions of people have taken it, and there is so much written about it. While it's beyond the scope of this course, obviously, to get into personality typing in any depth, let me just briefly summarize what the MBTI is all about. Isabel Briggs Myers, the woman who began work on the MBTI, worked for 40 years on the writing of Carl Jung. The theory was that our basic personality is made up of a mixture of four traits: extroversion or introversion, sensing or intuition, feeling or thinking, judging or perceiving. Different personality types, it was theorized, have very different ways of communicating, of speaking, of hearing, all of which can lead to irritation, misunderstanding, and strife. We all gather and process data in very different ways. We bring order to our worlds differently. These are preferences. They have nothing to do with intellect, with spirituality, or maturity. Personality typing is such a helpful tool because it takes the morality out of some of our interpersonal problems. It is helpful to know, isn't it, that Mr. Smith is not out to get you. This is not a deliberate, sinister, calculated plot to mess with your mind or get your goat. He's just being himself. He's responding from a personality type quite different from yours. So it's really quite true. "He's not my type" is more than just an expression. The goal of tests like the MBTI and others is not a sort of typecasting. It's not to box ourselves in, pigeonhole us, but to learn how to get along with each other. And with the Spirit's help, we can be sensitive to others and value diversity rather than suspect it. Certainly, differences in personality type are no excuse to give up, nor do they mean eternal incompatibility. Most spouses, after all, have different personality types. Many churches are now using the MBTI inventory for hiring staff people, or just as a tool to help them understand and get along with one another better. As well, there's considerable literature now on personality type in church leadership, and how to be sensitive to personality typing as you plan church services and activities. I would recommend that you take the MBTI if you haven't already done so, because it is helpful to get an idea of what your personality type is, according to this theory. Certainly, though, you don't need to take the type test. But it is helpful to know the idea of it, and that is that people who strike us as adversarial or oppositional may merely be responding out of personality preference that's different from our own. Let us not be guilty of shutting people out of our lives, labeling them as difficult, incorrigible, or just aliens from another planet, when they quite likely have a fresh insight for us, another viewpoint, a challenge to our assumptions, which, if we would allow it, would be stimulating and useful rather than threatening and divisive. Along with the fact that your difficult person might have a different personality type than you do, he or she probably has a different gift mix than yours. The best example of gifts differing is Paul's analogy to the body in 1 Corinthians. This metaphor is so rich and loaded with meaning, isn't it? It says that every part of the body is necessary for quality, optimum life, that no part is expendable. It says that no organ can be demeaned or slighted or criticized simply because it can't do the job of another organ in my body. I don't criticize my ear because it can't do the job of my eye. It simply wasn't designed to function in that gifting. So too, if you have a fiery evangelist working with a fatherly pastor, they might well see things very differently. Or a person with strong prophetic gifting who delivers a ringing declaration of truth might offend one with a gift of compassion because the prophetic one sounded too harsh or confrontive to the one with the compassionate gifts. 1 Corinthians 12 implies that there will be problems in relationships with different giftings. The eye can't say to the hand, I don't need you, nor the head say to the feet, I don't need you. We are instead to appreciate our differences and together earnestly desire the best gift, love, as Paul goes on to talk about in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Here is another way a person might become difficult for you. It is when you've allowed an unhealthy dependency relationship to develop between you and this other person. It's the I need you to need me syndrome. And here's where we counselor types and burden bearers get sort of a messianic complex. We need to say, folks, of course, we would never say that. And we would always say, oh, we used to do that, but we're so smart now we don't. Oh, but we do. We have this urge to fix, to take care of others. So, of course, we tend to find high maintenance folks to fill this need. And then we wonder why we get exhausted. Then we start resenting that person or avoiding them. Instead, what we should have done is set some good, healthy, realistic boundaries as to what we can or cannot do in regard to this person. And then how about those times when we're nursing a persecution complex? Have one too many church fights made us distrustful, guarded, armored, defensive? That wolves really are in sheep's clothing after all? That we will be cordial, but we will not be close? Or maybe you know of some brothers and sisters, as I do, that flatly refuse now to do any business with Christians, who say that they've been hurt so many times, they've been burnt so often, that they won't take their business to brothers and sisters in Christ. Needless to say, if we continue to hold on to those old caricatures, if you will, of people in the church, we will find all sorts of ways to match up people now with those old pictures from the past. And we will find a lot of people difficult, which we wouldn't if our hearts were clear. Here's another way a person might be difficult for you. Perhaps you yourself haven't been clear about what is problematical for you in the relationship. It might seem very evident to you, but it isn't to the other person. Often they're simply unaware that they are being difficult for you. You haven't said anything, and so they go on in this blissful ignorance. As St. Jerome once said, it's one thing to be ignorant, it's another thing to be ignorant of your ignorance. Maybe you have simply not said, please don't do this, this is difficult for me. Maybe you need to do, as I've had to on several occasions, say, please don't bring your concerns to me just before the worship service is about to start. Here's another way that a person can become difficult for you. Perhaps it's because of displacement or transference. In other words, this person reminds you of someone negative in your past. Shifting anger about the original person who hurt you or made you angry onto now this person in the present. We do this without thinking. It's unconscious. So if we are having a really strong negative reaction to somebody and there really isn't data to support it, we should be asking ourselves, who does this person remind me of? Why am I getting such a strong reaction to this person for no apparent reason? For example, if you remind me of my grade 9 French teacher, Miss Hill, that is not a good thing for either of us. Oh, she was really difficult. She was so stiff and starchy and prim. She was never satisfied. She wore these long pleated plaid skirts along with her long pleated frowny face. And you could just never please her. Well, you get the picture. No, actually, I have made my peace with Miss Hill. But we all do this. So if you find yourself reacting with excessive negativity toward a person, and it doesn't really seem to be warranted, you need to be honestly asking yourself, who in the past that I had a negative experience with is this person reminding me of? Here's another reason why a person might be difficult for you. Let me illustrate with the example of two women I'll call Nan and Mary. Nan and Mary knew each other 10 years ago when they were both students and living in a foreign country. 10 years later now, Nan, who is still single, is moving to the city where Mary, who's now married, is pastoring with her husband Bill. Mary's situation has quite changed in the last 10 years. Now a pastor's wife with two small children, she's very busy, and although she wants to be friendly and have a relationship with Nan, there's no way that she has the time to put into the relationship that she did 10 years before. But the times that Mary does get together with Nan seem to be less and less life-giving because Nan is obviously disenchanted with the fact that the relationship isn't as close as it once was. And she seems to be increasingly critical of Mary and saying things like, oh, I see you're just too busy for me. She seems to be very disenchanted because she's no longer obviously Mary's bosom buddy. And it's evident that Mary doesn't confide in her the way they used to together when they were single students. We also find a similar situation happening when churches grow from a small size to large. There will be those parishioners who say, in the old days, we saw so much more of our pastor. He used to come visiting on us much more often. We had a lot of more face-to-face interaction. But now that the church has grown, we see so much less of him. And these people, because of this change in relationship, can become quite difficult for the pastor. Here now is one final reason why someone might be difficult for you personally. Perhaps you are judging them based on outward appearances rather than the heart, as it says in 1 Samuel 16:7. And we always think that we're not judging by outward appearances, that we really are judging the heart. But we all have our own assumptions, we all have our biases, and they all impact relationships. Dress codes, styles, the kind of job a person has, their accent, their ethnicity, their mannerisms can create difficulties where there really aren't any. I remember being at a dinner a couple of months ago, and I usually think that I have less biases than a lot of folks, but I was across the table from this young woman who had both a nose ring and one of those tongue rings. And I just sat there looking at this woman as she ate her salad, wondering how she managed with this nose ring and with this mouth ring. I could just hear myself inside saying, "Ooh, nose rings, tongue rings are so perverse." I was distancing myself from her and not seeing her at all as someone that Jesus loves. Later on, I was caught up short, though. I mentioned to a friend that I'd been sitting at supper with a young woman, and she said, "Yeah, I saw that you were sitting with her. You know, that's my roommate, Ingrid. You know, the one I've been telling you about, I've been witnessing to. She's really such a nice person." So I guess you get my point about judging based on outward appearances rather than the heart. This wraps up the end of our discussion of why people would be difficult specifically for you or for me. I wanted you to get thinking about what your perceptions and your assumptions are, and that perhaps there are difficulties where there should not be. If your current perceptions and assumptions about the difficulties were entirely accurate, says one writer, you would probably have been able to solve your problem by now. Well, as I said, this concludes the end of this tape, but I had just one little thing I wanted to throw in. I think it fits in this section. And that's this. Consider it sort of a footnote. We women are sometimes difficult people in the church just because of our gender. Now, I didn't say that. One English pastor, a well-known seminar speaker, said it recently. He said, "Have you noticed that a strong man is revered in the church, but a strong woman is viewed with misgiving, suspicion, and in some circles as having a Jezebel spirit?" Well, I just thought I would pass that little item along for you to consider. This, then, is the end of two